Hello all, and welcome to the introductory episode of Fueled by Charcoal, a podcast where artists speak openly about burnout, inspiration, and their creative processes. I'm your host, Connor Saffron, jack of all trades, master of some, and today I'm here to introduce what I mean by being fueled by charcoal, and a bit of a retrospective on my own creative history. So I knew from a very young age that I wanted to be some kind of artist. I was surrounded by various creatives throughout my childhood. My parents had a party decor and event planning business, a family affair, aptly named because most of the people who worked for that company were either family or close enough. My mom has been a florist for longer than I've been alive. I've seen her practice her craft practically and, you know, for her own sake, tending a garden, making centerpieces for large-scale events. So when I was very young, I think the first medium I really tried to imbue myself in was illustration. I like to draw. I'm not sure if I was ever really good at it, but, you know, it was something that I had really grown to love. I loved the practical, mechanical artistry of everything, but it didn't take too long for me to recognize that my peers in this regard were far exceeding my own capabilities. And I know that especially drawing is a skill set that has to be honed over thousands and thousands and thousands of hours, but tell that to a young, undiagnosed ADHD kid. So there was a certain point where it was really my first experience with burnout. I saw that I wasn't improving, I wasn't hitting the mark where I wanted to be, and I couldn't get the images in my head out onto canvas. And I was really frustrated with that. So I kind of stepped away from trying to draw, trying to improve that skill set, until a little bit later in life, starting high school, I really kind of fell in love with photography. I was lucky enough that my high school had a film photography lab, and I just loved that process. I loved the mechanism of utilizing your creative perspective of, you know, the artist's eye, and finding that still moment where you see exactly what you want to see, and then you can depict what you want to see for other people. I also really enjoyed the technical process of working with film, the mechanisms of treating it, being able to create negatives and honestly like make a multitude of images from the same negative just based on how you used your lighting and how you treated your paper. It was a time where I was really getting reinvested with my creativity. Now, at the same time, I had been, journaling, writing a little bit, but it was hobbyist at best. So towards the end of my time with that photo lab in high school, there was kind of a shift to embrace more of the digital aspect as well. God, Photoshop CS3, CS4, and I got a digital DSLR. It wasn't new even then, but I think it was a Canon T3i. I still enjoy the process of going out and taking pictures or bringing my camera with me places where, you know, opportunities might strike, because so often, like any other idea, you just have to be in the right place and time and mindset and to be able to capture that image. But towards the end of that guided education process where we were embracing digital, that really kind of was also the onset of Instagram and digital filters. And I just looked at the work that I was doing and how much work it was taking to not reach the same results. And I looked to what, you know, kids with room temperature IQs were able to make using this tool, and I just kind of shied away from it. I kind of just looked at it with a bit of disdain. I didn't want to embrace that change because I was so in love with the film process. But, you know, I learned very quickly after not having that opportunity, that access to that lab, that there are not just the self-imposed mental barriers to engaging with art. The practical and fiscal barriers to entry are also really disheartening. I did try to get back into digital photography about a year or two after I started working at an electronics store, and took full advantage of utilizing my access to certain displays in the digital imaging department, sticking around for the guided classes that were offered at that point in time, trying to re-ingratiate myself to relearning, to reapproaching this thing that I loved for so long, and try to get back into it. But at the same time, you know, when you sell the hardware, you become increasingly aware of the range of price points. The cost of lenses is hundreds to thousands of dollars. Digital camera bodies, especially with the onset of mirrorless cameras, like entry-level stuff was like $500-$600, which, you know, was a whole paycheck for me in a time where I didn't really have the freedom to go out to eat more than once a week, much less buy myself a camera body. But looking at like dedicated camera bodies for video and dedicated camera bodies for still frame and full frame cameras, you're like thousands of dollars. And it was just such, it was staring into the financial abyss of committing myself to continue to just kind of be financially tied to the constant and ever-evolving state of the technology. Because when you look at the industry that utilizes these skill sets and this hardware, it's just, if you fall too far behind, you're not producing cutting edge stuff. You're not going to be able to sell to people who would look to buy still frame images. You're not going to be able to work with companies that don't provide that hardware for you, but they expect a familiarity with the most recent hardware. It was one of those things where that was like my first real industrial burnout. And photography was something I loved so much that I had planned to go to school for it. It was just, it was very difficult to kind of come to terms with the fact that, you know, this is something that if I were to take that step, it would have to be something that I monetize. Otherwise, there'd be no way to continue forward with it. And part of me just really was kind of sickened by that mindset naturally kind of ingratiating itself to the forefront of my train of thought. Just like, while I'm sure that our late stage capitalist Western ideals of how can I monetize this, how can I hustle culture this into paying my bills, is maybe not seen as a destructive point of view, as an artist, it was like poison. It really kind of disenchanted a lot of the reasons that I got into being creative in that medium. And there were a couple of other facets. I was in school. I was paying most of my own bills, still living at home. I was really in a mindset and I was surrounding myself with people whose priorities were not my own. So I didn't really have like the room to breathe, to be creative. I didn't have the time. I had to go to work. I had to go to school. I had to figure out a way to get places because I didn't have a car. I had to figure out what I was doing. I had to figure out what degree I was going to be majoring in, and like what would be most worth the time, what careers were hiring, what jobs paid well. This is the constant weight on the back of any young creative trying to push what others mark off as a hobby to the forefront. So what I was doing and who I was with and what occupied my time, regardless of whether or not I wanted it to, was really kind of sapping the energy that would otherwise go to creative means. I was so exhausted from eventually my full-time retail job that I barely spent any time outside of work that wasn't sleeping. And this created this like perpetual cycle of, you know, really toxic out of work relationships and really like this endless cycle of, I felt like I was never not at work. And when you work retail, having to play the part of salesperson and wear that facade and cater to people who treat you like garbage, it's the same as any other service industry job. But with retail, you have this expectation of being the most profitable and having this undercurrent of competitiveness, and it just creates this hostility between everyone around you that definitely is not conducive to creative thinking. So I was kind of like at my wit's end. I had completely given up on these creative outlets that really were the major thing sparking joy in my life. And I just had this continually multiplicative burden I felt like I was carrying. And there, you know, walking through the desert, carrying twice your body weight with no sight of oasis for hundreds of miles, you know, it was not a great time. And I was at that stage where it's like I had to start prioritizing money even over the things that made more sense. So I dropped out of school. I was going to work full time and I was working more than full time hours, but not really getting paid overtime because, shocker, retail. I didn't really engage with my creativity and it was draining me. I didn't really have the opportunity for that self perspective until I was laid off from my job because corporate interests. And it was, and it felt like fate, because one of like the bigger sources of toxicity in my life, it was an ongoing relationship, and it had ended the night before I was informed that my position was being removed and that I had to apply for other jobs or else I would be laid off. At first I was like, okay, I was scrambling. I was like, I have to find a plan. I have to figure this out. I don't know what I'm going to do because everything outside of this job has abandoned me, or I'm finally free of it. It depends on when you had asked me. And it was a week later, sitting in the parking lot outside of, and it was a week later when I was sitting outside waiting for the start time of my interview to go work for the part of the store that sold appliances. And I just thought to myself, is this what I want to do with my time? Is this worth my time? And I thought to myself, I fucking hate it here. This place is draining my life away, and it doesn't pay me well enough to continue to bind myself to a cross for it. So I let that time frame lapse, and I, you know, took the severance and ran. There were a couple of months where I was really just kind of trying to figure out and remember who it was. And the job market has always been bad and will always be bad and has continued to grow worse. But at the time, I thought, oh, hey, I had these skill sets. I could reference these numbers. I had this kind of practical training. I was this position. And I thought I'd be able to find work like nothing. And no, there were places where I was overqualified to work that didn't want to hire me because I was overqualified. And, you know, I was working nothing but retail for 5 years. I had very little other skill sets and I was out of school. So there were not a lot of options outside of the places that didn't want to hire me because they thought I was going to try to bargain for a higher rate. And they were right to think that. But still, it was this weird limbo. And a couple months went by and I was in this depressive malaise. And a friend of mine had decided to kind of like bully me into going with them back to school for a Japanese class that they were taking. And it sparked my interest enough. And it was enough of a non-commitment that I could take these classes and then I could just bail. It was a weird point in my life where I didn't see the value of returning to school because it just wasn't, the time investment didn't make sense to me. So they pitched the idea of learning Japanese to me, and I thought it was enough of a non-commitment to be able to go into the Japanese class and then, you know, do with that what I would. Learning a language was always something that interested me, but, you know, I wasn't thinking of like, oh, how can I apply this skill set? It was just like, oh, this is a thing I want to do. And I had someone who actively ignored my initial protests and said, no, come on, you have done nothing for months, come and do this. What's the worst thing that can happen? You learn something. So I started back in school, and I think it was like my third semester back that I said, all right, if I'm going to be here, I may as well at least finish out my associate. And then I did. I had taken all the Japanese classes available at that point. I'd gotten a certificate of academic achievement because you couldn't get a full degree in that. So I went back and I finished up what my prior credits would have given me. And I sat there and I thought to myself, okay, at least an associate's degree is kind of like the minimum bar for a lot of places taking applications. I can start looking for a better job. And they might actually respect the fact that I've done the bare minimum. I had no reaction, no change to my applications, no responses, no... I had a couple of interviews that went nowhere. And I could feel in the moment we're going nowhere. Until a opportunity came up that was working with that same friend at where they worked. And it was super, like, low effort. And, you know, I'd spoken to the hiring manager and they were totally respectful of the fact that I was still in school. And it was stagnation, but it wasn't, you know, becoming a shut-in. And it was a paycheck, which I was in desperate need of. So I committed to doing that. And I just kind of worked that job and finished up my associate's degrees. And I was at that precipice where it's like, okay, none of the jobs that I'm applying for with my current skill set and focus and degrees seem to want to hire. You know, some of those interviews might have just been me. Some of them might have been me kind of overselling my own experience. But, you know, you kind of have to do that. So I thought to myself, okay, maybe I should go for another degree. But it's got to be something that I'm at the point where I can't just get whatever I think is going to result in a job. I have to get a degree in something that I can see myself doing that can help reignite, you know, the fire in me. And it was around that same time that me and that same friend had started going to our local gaming store to get into D&D. There was a local adventure league that, you know, I had always been like adjacent to the TTRPG space and I was interested in it, but it was just something that I was like, okay, I don't. There was social stigma when I was a lot younger, and then there was the lack of time, and I had time and I needed to branch out. So I thought I would finally engage with this thing that I kind of just have passively enjoyed without actively being a part of it. And in January of 2020, started hanging out with this group at this Adventure League, and we had exchanged contact information because we wanted to do additional sessions because Adventure League runs on a schedule and we liked playing the game too much. So we were behind where they expected us to be. And, you know, a couple months later, global shutdown. And we were lucky enough that, you know, the group continued to play via online communication and map software. And it was interesting. And it was something that really kind of helped me reignite not just like my creative passions, because, you know, when you play Dungeons and Dragons, you're making a character and that particular character fills a role, but you're writing your character, you write backstories for them, and you write reasons why, you know, they are who they are and how they interact with things. And you have this secondary quantification of decisions and how things go being determined outside of your own wants. It's a literal roll of the dice. And being able to have that creative process with character creation. And I made like 40 character sheets with different characters that I wanted to play. But, you know, playing that same character long enough, and you're not just concerned about your own character's storyline, dichotomy, and the relationship to whatever the campaign is, but how they interact with that group. And that group is other people writing different characters using those same processes and interacting with them. And, you know, this diegetic means of collaborative narrative was something that really kind of reignited that initial spark. So, you know, cut to a year or so later, and I'm still waffling about whether or not to, you know, find a particular school, like what I want to do, because I'm just killing time while I'm working. And, you know, the outset of the pandemic, when you're a I never stopped going to work because I was one of those necessary entities that that couldn't really not. So I'm working this job, and at first it's, you know, it's pretty low key and there's not a lot happening, and I really just had time. I had a lot of time, so I did a lot of reading. I had my D&D game, and I really just was kind of re-engaging with my love for immersive narrative. Now, I had always loved various types of immersive media. I was a lifelong gamer. I played video games. I read books as a kid. Those were my two things. Those were the hobbies. Those were those identifier activities. But when it came down to like being more insightful as to why I committed to those practices, it was just a love of narrative. And it was a love of narrative that was so well written that you could really be immersed in the world or in the character building and just kind of, I think that I used it as an escapist thing, but immersive media is not necessarily always escapist in nature. You can just enjoy something, and you can get really involved in enjoying something. And I was thinking to myself one day, as I had like a really particularly negative interaction at work, and I kind of just sat there and I was like, I can't keep doing this. I got to do something that I enjoy. And the thing that sung to me, that spoke out in that moment, was like, I thought to myself, if I could write something that inspired me the way that the books that I read as a kid and to this point have continued to inspire me, if I could inspire someone else in that same way, if I can light somebody else's fire, then that would be the most fulfilling thing I think I can do. I think it was also a little selfish because there were a lot of different stories that I was expecting out of books that I was reading that weren't there and that I couldn't find. And I think there's something in being a creative that if you're searching for something and can't find it, you have the responsibility to make it if it's within your wheelhouse. So I thought I'd go back to school for writing. And it was that moment, that kind of sudden onset of the obvious, this epiphany of like, I have to commit myself to this, that really kind of reignited the old coals. You know, it was, I refer to it in retrospect as my anxiety phoenix moment, where I was basically experiencing zero chemically involved ego death. And I thought to myself, okay, this is what I have to do. I want to do this. So I need to go back to school to sharpen the skill set to be good enough that, you know, anything I make is worth it. And that was that moment. That was that reignition for me. That was where, you know, the old wood fire that used to run me, the old wood fire of my creative drive, those old charcoals reignited. So when I talk about being fueled by charcoal, I think that it's acknowledging burnout. It's acknowledging that, you know, there's a point after you reach the inability to move forward where your body screams out to you saying that something is wrong, that you need to reconsider what you're doing, because what you're doing isn't sparking that same joy. You're taking that old fuel source, the wood in that old stove that has been heat treated to form charcoals that will be the fire for what makes you burn brighter. That's what I mean when I think of what it means to be fueled by charcoal. It's taking your burnout and burning brighter despite it. So I have gone forward. I've, you know, re-enrolled in school. I'm going after a creative writing degree, and I'm trying to re-engage with my creativity. But alongside re-engaging with my creativity, I'm trying to re-engage with, you know, those people around me who are also professional creatives who have gone through these same paths to see if, you know, there's any signs along the way, any lights along the path that can help not just guide me, but maybe guide anyone who comes after me. How to subsume that doubt, how to embrace that no matter, you know, the failure, no matter the fear of what may or may not come, how to keep moving forward. So this podcast, this ongoing conversation is going to be with individuals across a variety of mediums, artists from different industries, people at different stages in their career, people who have retired. I am blessed to know quite a few creatives, and this is an opportunity to ask those questions that are otherwise a little too rough, a little too tough for casual conversation. But I think that in these conversations, you can find something that might help you reignite your own charcoal. I think that my greatest inspiration for my creative process and going forward and the outreach between artists was David Lynch. I was always, you know, that weird kid that liked Twin Peaks when I was younger, before I really had a deeper understanding of some of those characters. It was a media that I engaged with throughout my, you know, throughout my youth and throughout my life, and I go back and I rewatch that show still, and I still find new beautiful things within it, within the majority of Lynch's work, not just in his directorial entries, but his paintings, the books that have been written by and with him, the music that he's put out, because there is like this kind of like spiritualism when it comes to how Lynch engages with creativity, his ideas on the grand unified field, and, you know, basically the collective unconscious in its respect to ideas and to art that really were probably the first major sources of saying, hey, maybe I can do that too, or maybe I have to do that because this is my perspective. And in written word, the reason that I've chosen this path was probably set in stone when I was 10 years old, I think. I read Cornelia Funke's Inkheart series and then immediately followed it up with, or at least the first book at that point, and immediately followed it up with David Eddings' Belgariad, which, after, you know, reading a little more about him as a person, definitely a conversation for separating art and artist. But before I had the opportunity to read Tolkien, it was Eddings' work that really kind of helped me, you know, engage with the idea of fantasy narrative, you know, the ability to make those choices, to find yourself at the precipice of where fate intersects and choose the path. So I think that taking all of that within myself and trying to reach outward and make those stories I can't find elsewhere, that's what's driving me now. That's what's pushing me forward. That's what I want to do. Despite how dark and scary the world is now, how against art it seems that every industry is the anti-artist, the anti-employee, the anti-consumer ideas that are being pushed to the forefront. And I'm not just talking about AI, just those who don't know what it means to engage with a creative medium, being in charge of whether or not creative mediums exist to be engaged with. It's a scary thing. But I think that, you know, not to go quietly into that dark night, you have to continue to burn those creative fires. You need to continue to burn bright regardless of how dark the world is, because it's that light that guides the way. So, waxing poetic aside, which is what happens when I'm here to talk alone too long, we're going to be interviewing some people that I am lucky enough to know about their perspectives, their processes, and how to exist professionally as a creative, how one takes the task upon themselves and how they perpetuate it so that, you know, they can continue to live off of their own work. But I thank you for joining me in this initial mission statement of what we want to do here. I appreciate you, dear listener. And if you resonated with anything that I said today or would like to continue to see where these conversations lead or know someone that might resonate with this as well, feel free to subscribe to whatever medium you're listening to this podcast through, to follow up, to continue to listen to our RSS feed as we have these sessions and as they get put up. But I would appreciate you for your time, dear viewer, and look forward to you joining us next time. But until then, keep on keeping on and keep those home fires burning.